It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Okay, don't worry, I'm not gonna keep singing. But that song is really popular this time of year, especially in the beginning of the Christmas season, right? The temperature has dipped low, the snow is falling, our Christmas trees are up, the cities have decorated the main street areas, the shops are all decorated, and we're beginning to experience that joy and wonder of Christmas. And as we make our way to Christmas, we're going to continue to have all kinds of feelings, right? We're going to have anticipation and excitement, gratitude and love. There's going to be warmth and nostalgia. And then we're also going to feel some anxiety and sadness and exasperation and loneliness and guilt and be exhausted at some point. And I think most of us will get to the end of the Christmas season, we'll also feel a letdown. We might even think for a minute that we're having a bout of depression, right? And that happens for a lot of reasons. Christmas isn't always what it's cracked up to be. We have dysfunctional families, we have old wounds that show up, we have to-do lists in our job that we have to juggle, we have financial strains that get amplified this time of year. But honestly, sometimes we get that low after the season because we've actually had a really good Christmas, and it feels like we're bottoming out when we would just kind of return to everyday life. Now, I think most of us get that, right? We understand that there's going to be all of these feelings that happen at Christmas. But there's one emotion that we probably don't ever really associate with Christmas, but it's like all the others. It's there, and it can show up anytime it wants. But because we don't recognize it, we often, we just don't realize how powerful it is and how much it can get in the way of us experiencing Emmanuel, God with us. It can diminish our joy and our wonder and our capacity to engage with Christmas. And it can keep us, it can be this obstacle that keeps us from experiencing that abundant life that Jesus told he came to give us in John 10:10. So what's the emotion I'm talking about? It's bitterness, right? So what I want us to do is I want us to first start with defining what is bitterness. I think it's really hard actually to define it. And yet, when you've walked into someone who's bitter, you just know it, all right? We know when someone's bitter. We don't always know when we're bitter. Sometimes we have other labels or justifications for it. Brené Brown, you may be familiar with her. She's a social researcher, and she writes this. She says that bitterness is essentially resentment. And resentment is the feeling of frustration, judgment, anger that better than, or it's a hidden envy that's related to a perceived injustice or unfairness. Another psychologist defined it this way. Bitterness is a chronic and pervasive state of smoldering resentment. And the challenge with bitterness is it's not as loud as most of our other emotions are. In fact, I think part of what defines bitterness is that it's subtle, it's deceitful. And so we miss its power. We downplay the damage that it does to ourselves and others. And I wonder if that is why in Hebrews, the author writes this, Hebrews chapter 12, verses 14 and 15. They write, "Pursue peace with everyone and holiness. Without it, no one will see the Lord. Make sure that no one falls short of the grace of God and that no root of bitterness springs up, causing trouble and defiling many." So they write, we're going to pursue peace with everyone. We're going to pursue holiness. And that makes sense. In fact, that sounds a lot like the greatest commandments, right? Love God, love others. And then he keeps going. He says that after your holiness, you want to make sure that no one falls short of the grace of God and that no root of bitterness springs up. Now, it's interesting to me as I read that. The author tells us pursue peace, live holy, and he wants us to understand, like, if you don't do those things, you can't see the Lord. But he follows that not with a bunch of action steps, not a list of moral do's and don'ts, but essentially a concern for others and a concern for our heart. Don't let anybody else miss out on the grace of God, and don't allow this emotion to get inside of you and harm you. It's like this verse makes this full circle from beginning to end. If you want to pursue peace with everyone and holiness, then the grace of God has to be center. And if bitterness gets in the way, it's going to make it really challenging to pursue peace, to experience that holiness that God works in us, and it's going to end up causing problems for you. And not just for you, but it's going to end up causing problems for other people to pursue peace, to seek holiness, and to experience God's grace. So you know I'm a word nerd, so of course I went and I looked. The Greek word used here for bitterness comes from another word that means to cut, to pierce, to prick. And over time, then the word changed and morphed to mean sharp or penetrating to the senses. So you think of things that you have smelled or taste that have been bitter, feelings that you would say that was a bitter feeling. The Greeks came to describe the use of this word as a long-standing resentment, as a spirit which refuses to be reconciled. And the Hebrew writer says that this bitterness can cause trouble. And again, word nerd alert here. This word means is the idea of a disturbance with a crowd. You harass with crowds, like a mob. So think about that. The idea is that this bitterness, this root, gets in and it begins to interfere or bother us to the point it causes discomfort. We become pestered and harassed by it. It crowds out all our other emotions, all other sense of reality. It distorts it, messes with our perspective. But it doesn't stop there. Bitterness doesn't just cause us trouble, it ends up hurting others. The Hebrew writer says it defiles others, which was fascinating. So pause for a science lesson, right? We have an acid, and I'm probably not going to say it right, called picric acid. And it comes from the same word that the Greeks use here for bitterness, because the taste of it is bitter. I don't know who decided to try out an acid, but they found that it was bitter. Let me tell you a little bit more about this acid. It's used in the production of explosives, matches, batteries. It's used in dyes in the leather industry. It is volatile. It is considered flammable. Heat, spark, or flames can ignite it. And the dried out acid can explode if it's exposed to flame or friction or shock. And they warn you need to treat it as if it's an explosive. Explosive, unstable, flammable. Bitterness is, as one commentary wrote, it's like bad air. It pollutes not just the bitter person, but everyone who comes in contact with it. And so as Christ followers, we are instructed to pursue peace with everyone, right? Search after holiness and don't let others miss out on the grace of God. And then we're admonished, get rid of bitterness. We do not want to let it grow, because when it grows, it only has one outcome. Bitterness has only one outcome. It's bad fruit. You get nothing else out of it. Okay, so now we've kind of got an idea of what bitterness is, but now I have more questions for you. Like, how do I get rid of it? And if it is so subtle and so deceitful, how do I know when I have it growing inside of me? Okay, before I answer those, I want us to consider one other question, and that is what bitterness is not. I think that sometimes we confuse a couple of the emotions with bitterness, and they're not. So let's start with bitterness is not anger. Just because someone is angry, it doesn't mean they're bitter. It means they're angry. So anger is an emotion that is like the lights on my dashboard. It alerts me to something. It tells me something is wrong. And then I need to stop what I'm doing and figure out what is wrong, whether that's something internally or externally, but I need to address it. So if it's external, if my anger is external, it's what I would call justified or righteous anger. That means that something unfair has happened, something unjust has happened, and I need to address it. Maybe I need to set boundaries or make changes. And often, when people are justifiably angry, we will tell them, "Oh, you're just bitter," to avoid addressing their genuine concern. They're not bitter, they're angry. Now, if it's internal, so it's the anger I have that maybe is not placed, it's not coming from a good place, it's not justified, means that my inner dialogue, what I'm telling myself, my worldview, my ability to give grace or my lack of humbleness has gotten in the way of truth, and I need to be reminded of the truth. And we do the same thing with people who are angry for all the wrong reasons. We just tell them they're bitter. Because again, we don't know how to hold them accountable. We don't know how to help them work through those feelings. It makes us uncomfortable, so we just say you're bitter. They're not bitter. They're experiencing anger because they're human. But here's the danger with anger, right? Specifically unresolved anger. If you fail to do the work, whatever is necessary to address the thing that has you angry, make boundaries, change the way you think about yourself or others, then that anger will sit there and it becomes a breeding ground for bitterness. And so while I worry that sometimes we tell people that are angry, they're bitter, to avoid dealing with them, I also wonder how many of us, we justify our anger, but it's not really anger anymore. It's just bitterness. Here's the second thing that bitterness is not. It is not being hurt or wounded. Again, I have watched us label people that are hurt or wounded as simply bitter way too much. And it's easy to do because we often don't want to deal with a hurt, maybe because we've caused it, or again, it just makes us uncomfortable. And so we start giving advice, you know, suck it up, pull yourself up, get over it, forgive and forget. But the problem is that hurts and wounds they don't respond to those kind of platitudes. Hurts and wounds, like anger, have to be addressed, they have to be acknowledged, and they have to be dealt with, and they have to be given time to heal. And so that means that people who are hurt and wounded will often act in ways that aren't good. They don't behave like they should. Now, that doesn't mean they're bitter. It means they've been hurt. And we don't fault someone, say, for example, that's in a wheelchair when they come up to the pool for the first time that, well, why don't you just jump in? We recognize that because of the physical ailment, they're going to need more time, they're going to need some resources, some skills, so that they can then get in the pool. And it is the same way with people that are hurt or wounded. We don't fault them. We need to allow them the time to heal and give them the tools that they need. But here's the catch. Just like anger, if you have a hurt or a wound that you do not address, you do not do what is necessary to heal it, you're going to create an environment where bitterness can flourish. And I wonder how many times those of us who have been hurt or wounded have actually become bitter because it's been like a balm to us. It's a defense mechanism. Because anger is not sustainable, right? You cannot keep anger going forever. But bitterness can pick up where anger can't keep going. And so it becomes this defense mechanism that we use. And all we've actually done is pour poison into our own wounds. Okay, so we've got an idea what bitterness is. And we've recognized that while anger and hurt and wounds, that's not bitterness, the danger is that it can lead to bitterness. How do I know if I'm actually bitter? And then what can I do about it? So let's start with how are you going to know if you're bitter? And it's difficult because for bitterness will show up in some people. Some people will be very hostile, they'll be critical, they'll be fault-finding, and you're like, yeah, that's bitter. But actually bitterness can show up in someone, they're full of self-pity, they're overly melancholy all the time. Or maybe it shows up in someone who thinks they're super independent and cool and they're disinterested, but they're actually just bitter. So what does it look like? Well, there's all kinds of things you could look for, but as I studied, these are things that I found that might be an indication that you might be bitter. We're gonna put them on the screen and I'm just gonna walk through them. And I gotta be real honest with you, some of them were far more revealing to Jessica than she wanted them to be. So first of all, is the consistent spilling of anger, right? Again, anger alone doesn't mean you're bitter. We all have bad days. We all have days where we don't feel good, where we get stressed out, and we may snap at someone. Doesn't make it right, but that happens. But when you find yourself consistently spilling on your anger, consistently snapping at the people around you, family, friends, coworkers, neighbors, or maybe you find it really easy to spew your anger or snap at people, a group of people, you just kind of lump these people and it's real easy to throw it at them, you might want to ask yourself if you've moved from anger to bitterness. Isolation is another one. Now, I am an introvert, and the best thing you can do for me is let me have a night to myself, dinner out on the town by myself, and a hotel room to myself. That's amazing. But seeking solitude is not the same as isolating yourself. And so when I find myself pulling away from relationships, avoiding connection, not engaging with people, I should ask myself if something else is going on and if the root of bitterness may be kind of growing there. Then lack of grace, and that seems somewhat obvious, right? But I do think we always recognize it in ourselves. So I have to ask myself, when I am unwilling to allow others to make mistakes, when I'm reluctant to allow for their imperfections or my own, when I don't allow myself or someone else to have a bad day, when I withhold forgiveness, when I deem some people worthy of God's grace, but others not worthy of God's grace, am I becoming bitter? Oh, this one was a little revealing. Cynicism. So cynicism is very close to lack of grace, but it is not the same, and it's actually a bit more clever because it often disguises itself as wisdom, right? We think we're critical thinkers. We think we're these wise investors, right? But really, we've just assumed all people are stupid and they're all no good and they're all out to get you. That's really what it is. We don't just assume people do bad things. We assume people will always do bad things. We don't differentiate between being wise and setting up some boundaries to safeguard something or someone or the relationship and just disregarding everybody, writing them all off. I'm not going to give anyone a chance. See, wisdom is an offensive tool that God has given us that we can use so that we can engage in the world and with others. Cynicism is a defensive maneuver that is most often employed by fear, and it ends up isolating us from others, and it's a good indicator that we are just bitter. Gossip. Okay, so I am not a gossip. In fact, I would list gossip as like one of my top three relationship breakers. I need you to be loyal. If you're not loyal, bye-bye. I need you to be honest. If you don't practice honesty, bye-bye. If you move your mouth too much, I don't got time for you. So when I was looking at this, I was like, this is not me. But I kept looking, and again, bitterness shows up. It's a tricky little creature. So think about this. When I'm venting, passive-aggressive humor, sarcasm, sometimes that hides bitterness. Sometimes we'll say, oh, I'm just speaking the truth. Well, now I didn't tell her anything I haven't told her to her face, or I wouldn't, honey. But the reality is that if we were to go under that, our motive is not good. It doesn't mean that it's wrong to vent. It doesn't mean I hope, please let sarcasm have its place. I love sarcastic humor. That all has their place. But what's my motive? And sometimes my motive reveals that I'm bitter. And finally, I think bitterness can show up as excuses. Excuses we use, our anger, our hurts, our wounds, the actions of other people to keep us from doing what needs to be done to address the anger, the hurt, the wound, to address the issue that that person has done. This isn't the same as I have a anger issue or I have a hurt and wound and I'm struggling to work on it or I'm moving at a turtle's pace. You're dealing with it. You're not using it as an excuse then. But sometimes we use it and we say, well, there's no point. And we kind of just have a fatalistic attitude and we don't address or do what we need to do to fix the problem. And when that happens, it's a good chance that bitterness has begun to steal into your heart. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground. We've talked about what bitterness is. We've talked about what it isn't. We've talked about how it can show up. Well, now how do we address it? Like, how do we get rid of it when we find it? Because I want to remind you, bitterness only has one outcome, right? It's bad fruit. So when I look at anger can be good, right? It's a fuel. It can push me to fight injustice or to do the work on the inside if I'm wrong. Hurts and wounds are good. They're not good that we got them, but good things can come from them. So it's this idea that death stinks, but life can still come from death. But bitterness serves no person. It only destroys us. It only destroys those around us. And often it ends up destroying those around us who we absolutely care about the most. So how do we get through bitterness? I want to give us three things we can do. And I want to look at Ephesians 4, 31 through 32 to help us kind of walk through what we can do to deal with our bitterness. Paul writes this. He says, let all bitterness, anger, and wrath, shouting, and slander be removed from you, along with all malice. And be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving one another, just as God also forgave you in Christ. So Paul writes, just like the Hebrew writer, like we need to get rid of all of that stuff. All that crud needs to go away. That bitterness, get rid of it. And he says, and then you need to be kind and compassionate and forgive one another as Christ forgave you. So again, as I tell you, I'm a word nerd, studying that word bitterness. When you talk about bitterness and you're talking about emotions and attitudes, the opposite of bitterness isn't sweetness. It's kindness. It's this idea that is more than a feeling, but it is an action that we take that is suitable or excellent or serves the other person. You could think of it as goodness that is practical. It's not just a feeling, but it is an action. And one of the best ways I think we can deal with bitterness is to show kindness to ourselves and to one another. And so I want to give you a real practical thing you can do, because there's lots of ways to be kind, but I think when it comes to bitterness, this one really will hit us. Kill bitterness by recognizing limits. Brené Brown, who I quoted earlier, says that resentment or bitterness is an emotion that we often experience when we fail to set boundaries, ask for what we need, when expectations let us down because they were based on things we can't control, like what people think, what they feel, or how they're going to react. See, we often don't allow others to have limits, and we don't honor our own limitations. We don't set boundaries. We don't say no. We don't say, yes, I can, but I need X, Y, Z. We set expectations that are not realistic for ourselves, and then we turn around and we do this on other people. We set unrealistic expectations on them. We don't allow them to say no. We don't allow them to give us a qualified yes. We don't accept the fact that we can't read minds and they can't read ours, and we won't take people's help, or we insist that they have to take our help, and it just on and on the list goes. And we get bitter because we didn't allow ourselves or others to have limits, to be humans that are constrained by things that are often beyond our control. You can't do it all, be it all, or get it all. And neither can I, and neither can those around you. Now, I'm not asking you to let people off the hook. I'm not asking you to excuse bad behavior for yourself or them. I'm just asking you to let yourself and others have limits. You could say this is acceptance of what it means to be human without the cynicism. Now, here's the second thing. We can kill bitterness with compassion. Now, you'll see as we talk about these, kindness and compassion in the next one, they overlap, right? One leads to the other, brings you back to the other. But I want, when we're talking about compassion, to specifically talk about the idea of empathy. Empathy is the capacity to understand or feel what another person is experiencing from their perspective. It's putting yourself in their situation and saying, if I were them, how would I feel based on who they are and their experiences? And I think bitterness grows because we often don't practice empathy. We do not consider another person's motivations, their experiences, their reasons. And again, I'm not saying we excuse them. Compassion doesn't excuse someone else, but it does determine how we should respond to people, how we're going to hold them accountable. And that matters. Compassion allows you to give yourself and others grace. It makes it easier, not easy, easier to forgive. And it enables you and it empowers you to hold people accountable without stripping them of their God-given image. And all of that decreases the likelihood that bitterness can grow. Okay, the third thing that we can do is we can kill bitterness with forgiveness. Now, I hate talking about forgiveness when we don't have another half hour to talk about it, to unpack it. Forgiveness has been used to manipulate people. It has been weaponized to control people. So I want to hit a few critical points about forgiveness to make sure that we're kind of keeping this in the non-toxic, healthy arena. Forgiveness is not forgetting. It is not pretending that a wrong did not happen. It doesn't mean that you will not have to set boundaries or there will not be accountability. Forgiveness, while it is necessary for restoration to take place between two people, it does not guarantee that restoration will take place. Forgiveness, and I don't like this one personally, forgiveness doesn't even require an apology. Forgiveness stands on its own. Forgiveness is me releasing the other person, right? I'm saying you don't owe me anything. Again, that does not mean there are not consequences for their behavior. There is moral consequences, there's relationship consequences, legal consequences, but it means I am not the judge, jury, and executioner. God is. I give him those roles. And what that does is it takes an axe to bitterness. It prevents me from adding poison to my own injury or causing someone else to be injured who's not even connected to the situation. And forgiveness will lead me back to limits. I am not God. I'm not in control of others. I am only in control of how I'm going to respond and how I will trust God in the process. So you have three questions before you. Where do you and I need to embrace or set limits? How can we show compassion in the way we respond to others? And who do we need to forgive? As we wrap up, it seems odd to talk about bitterness, right? At this like most wonderful time of the year. But the reality is that as you and I spend time with friends and families, we're going to experience a range of emotions, and bitterness may be one of them. Your family and friends cause anger. They've caused wounds. You do. People fail to meet our expectations, and we fail to meet theirs, and we don't always know how to set boundaries, and their junk and our baggage kind of spill out all over one another, and it just is a hot mess. And bitterness loves that, and it breeds there. And so the chance that you're going to deal with bitterness this Christmas is very possible. As we begin to dig up that root of bitterness, certain things can happen. We might discover that we're still angry, right? And we converted from anger to bitterness. And it can be scary to suddenly find yourself angry again. It can feel like you've taken a setback. And what are you supposed to do? Because now suddenly you're going to have to address or deal with things that maybe you haven't dealt with before. Maybe you did that because you were told being angry was a sin, or you weren't supposed to feel that way, or you didn't have the skills, and maybe you still don't have the skills. And now you're going to figure out how to get the skills to deal with the situation that has caused anger. And if we keep going, some of us are bitter, we're going to keep digging up that root, and we're going to find out what I really am is hurt and wounded, and it hasn't been met, it hasn't been dealt with. And that's scary. Because bitterness keeps you safe, right? From experiencing all that stuff that comes with hurt and wounds. And so it's unnerving and scary to take it away. And so I want to encourage you that you're allowed to be angry and you're allowed to be hurt. And if you need pastoral care, we want to encourage you to reach out. If you need to go see a counselor, we encourage you to seek it. If you need a support system, connect with your church family through community groups and support groups. But most of all, as one of your pastors, I want to remind you this Christmas of that good news. The good news of Emmanuel, God with us. We started this message with a text from the book of Hebrews, and so I actually want us to end with another section of scripture from the book of Hebrews. In Hebrews chapter 4, the writer compares Jesus to the religious high priest, and he shows how Jesus is the ultimate high priest. But unlike any other high priest that's ever been, this is not a priest that is some distant religious person. They write, "This high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all of the same testings we do, and yet he did not sin. So let us come boldly to the throne of God, gracious God. Then we will receive his mercy, and we will find grace to help us when we need it most." The child that came 2,000 years ago that embodied humanity and divinity, who came as an expected and unexpected king, is the same Jesus who walked the earth, who got hungry, got tired, learned to walk, got sad, knew joy and laughter, got rejected and betrayed, knew loss, despair, and then died and rose again. He is our Christ. He's not just Emmanuel in the manger, but he is Emmanuel today with us in 2021. And so we can come to him and find mercy for our anger, our hurts, our wounds, our expectations, our weaknesses, our failures, our longings, all of that. And that also means that we can find in him compassion that extends to us the grace to deal with our bitterness. Will you join me in prayer? Christ, we thank you that you came. And we thank you that you didn't just come and live however you wanted, but you walked as your Father called you to walk. And you experienced what we experienced. And you know what it is to despair and to be hurt and to be wounded, to be angry, to be all the positive emotions there is, to feel all of it. Lord, I ask that as we move to Christmas, where we have bitterness, would we have the courage to be honest about it? To look at it and to assess if there's things we need to deal with or address, boundaries, counseling, hurts, wounds, whatever it is, Lord, would you give us the courage and the wisdom to do it? Would you guard our hearts as we move to Christmas and we continue to deal with our family and our friends and strangers, and they have to deal with us. Would you just help us to be kind, to be compassionate, and to forgive as you forgave us? In your name we pray. Amen.